Welcome to the Sweatshop Podcast with your host, the Sick Man, VC. Welcome to the Sweatshop Podcast. I'm your host, the Sick Man VC. This is episode 2. It's December 6, 2018. If you are one of the few people who tuned in to the first episode, thank you. Like I mentioned on that episode, I'll only get better. I'm getting reacquainted with the recording process, better yet, recording my vocals. Getting used to how I sound, the format, these things will start to fall in place, and I promise you, it will get better. Till then, let's talk about episode 2. Last episode, for the debut episode, I used the metaphor, or the comic book analogy, in Origins episode. I took the first part of the show to mention how I got the name for the podcast, the name VC. I'd forgot to mention where the Sick Man originated from. As a young Asian American, one of my biggest influences to this day was Bruce Lee, the late great Bruce Lee. In one of his films called The Chinese Connection in the States, it was the story of a Chinese town where Japanese decided to move in. This movie was very provocative at the time as it addressed racial issues, issues of racism and class. To make a long story short, the Japanese who had moved into this Chinese town mistreated the Chinese, discriminated against the Chinese, considered the Chinese less than human. One part, one of the volatile characters or antagonists in the movie refers to the Chinese as the Sick Man of Asia. This stood out to me. When it came to my hip-hop career, the terminology being sick or doing something sick, that was Sick Man. That was something that was a compliment for a level of doing something. The movie had used it in a derogatory term. The idea that the two could be combined made a lot of sense, so I recorded that very vocal track from the movie on a couple of my early albums. But people would always refer to my rhyme style as being sick, my beats being sick, so the Sick Man of Asia was a second name. Let's see, what are we going to talk about today? Well, like I said, I used the format for my website as a template for this podcast, where I tackle a variety of subjects. As a matter of fact, my website, sickmanvc.com, check it out. The motto, if you will, or the mantra is a place where my passions, pastimes, pursuits, and philosophies on life play out. So what I did with the website is I broke down different categories, starting with art, music, books and film, philosophy, sport and fitness, and then the rest. So for today's episode, I wanted to tackle music, I want to tackle books, I want to talk a little philosophy, and then I'll try to touch on sport and fitness, time permitting. Music.
What have I been listening to?
There's been an onslaught of great music lately. I mentioned last week how the music business has changed. The directive, the motives, what the artist is pursuing, how to monetize music, it's all changed based on the information age that we live in and the instant accessibility, if you will. Despite that, music did hit a period where it had to adjust. So music took a hit quality-wise, in my opinion. As musicians got a grasp on this technology and how the consumer consumes their music now. I think it's leveled out and you're starting to see a resurgence of music. And in some ways, a renaissance of music is permanent, is taking place, because we're going back to some of the same values and qualities of music that we found appealing in the past. We've come full circle, if you will. One of the newest albums that I've had the privilege of listening to is by one of my favorite bands, Muse. Muse is not my typical genre, but then again, I don't define my musical taste by a single genre. I will listen into any music as long as it's good music. There's many ways I describe what good music is. Muse is interesting because they have the persona of arena rock, meaning that they're larger than life in stature. Their sound is so polished. Their appeal is mass appeal, if you will, from a surface level. However, there's an underlying dark current to their music and the theme of their music, which separates them. Their new album, Simulation Theory, was brilliant because it spoke to this dichotomy. It takes the fictional scenario, well, in their case, they sound like they're convinced it's happening, that we're living in a simulation. I wrote a piece on my website, sickmanvc.com, an impression of their newest album, Simulation Theory. I don't like to call these reviews because I'm not in a position to judge another man's art or another person's music. I just listen to it, and as a fan, I tell you the impressions it made upon me. I'm going to read off my impressions of their newest album, Simulation Theory. This was dated from November 28th, 2018. And the blog entry was called Theories on the Simulation, Impressions of Simulation Theory, an album by Muse. Big rock trio Muse is back at it with their eighth studio effort, Simulation Theory. After what was announced as possibly their last studio album, Drones, 3 years ago, Simulation Theory seems like a sudden and surprising offering from the group, but in reality it was an organic creation slowly formed over their multi-year hiatus. The result is a very inspired effort and the most cohesive, epic, and thematic work since Black Holes and Revelations 12 years ago. For a band of just three, Muse sure comes off as one very big band, with a larger-than-life sound and persona. Their pop music and pop culture sensibilities further solidify them as a giant mainstream rock band, almost to the point of becoming a guilty pleasure for any hardcore music enthusiast, especially when you consider them as being synonymous with teens and quote-unquote Twilight vampires. What breaks them from this mold are the dark and dystopian themes that are increasingly pervasive in their music, all the while achieving the polish and superior craftsmanship associated with more mainstream music acts. Simulation Theory has struck this delicate balance. Outside of the recent resurgence of vinyl as a popular music medium, the relevance of a music album's cover art is certainly not what it once was. So when Muse recruited Kyle Lambert of Stranger Things fame to do the cover art to Simulation Theory, it was a very clever play on the aforementioned band's pop sensibilities and mainstream appeal, while at the same time staying true to the dark and dystopian themes that dominate their music, especially of late. Besides the popularity of the artist, the actual art does a great job of capturing this duality of the band. The colors and style scream pop, yet some of the imagery hint at an underlying darkness and mystery. If this was an LP from the 80s, the cover art would have gone a very long way into creating the mystique and mystery of what was to come before the listener dives into the simulation. Before diving into the simulation, it is also worth mentioning that another once significant aspect of music that has changed in recent times is the relevance and purpose of music videos and how this band decided to address this as well. Just like with the album artwork, Muse decided to defy modern convention and went all in on music videos for simulation theory. They created a series of videos for multiple songs off the album that portray the various simulations that the listener or viewer, in the case of VR, can partake in. These music videos capture much of the imagery off the album cover art, and they work synergistically to reveal the overall theme of the album, which is that there's a wizard behind the curtain or simulation. Besides faithfully recreating much of Kyle Lambert's imagery on the album cover, the style casting and individual plots of each video go a very long way in also capturing the band's pop sensibilities and mainstream appeal while revealing some of the dark themes that also define their current sound. Beyond the artwork and the videos, the actual music is where simulation theory shines. As much of the cover art and videos help contribute to the album's dystopian theme, ironically, when you ignore these visual components and just consider the sounds and the music, simulation theory is an intoxicating and immersive journey into Muse's hellish vision of the world. The music itself is a perfect showcase for the band's aforementioned duality, with its tight, epic, and bombastic sounds that speak about dark subject matter. Right off the bat, with Algorithms, they lead the listener into a pulsating soundscape that slowly builds with pianos, synths, and guitars, and which is metaphorically taking the subject into the simulation. Just like the musical stylings on the opening track, the lyricism is also trademark Muse. They are sparse yet poetic and anthem-esque lyrics that flirt with profundity and hint at density, but not at the risk of pretentiousness. Once inside the simulation, the album seems to play out in two parts. Although certainly not done chronologically and maybe not intentionally, part of simulation theory speaks about oppression, the oppressive forces, and literally transports listeners to the dark side. The other part of the album, albeit the majority of it, speaks about rising against this oppression and emerging out of the dark. An excellent example of the dark that the band conjured up for part of this album is Thought Contagion. They certainly don't do themselves any favors escaping the Twilight Vampire Association, but this song is a really fun vampire analogy about being bit and infected by lies and deception. You have songs like the co-produced Timberland Propaganda that further articulate the oppressive forces at work in the simulation. Even at the end of the album and after the simulation is revealed, the hero is summoned to rise above the inescapable darkness but still lurks in the void, which is the very last song on the album. Then there's the other part of simulation theory. Muse spends most of their time and energy on the album playing music to feel the revolution, and quite a few tracks come off like incantations or battle cries for the good fight taking place. Once the curtains pull back and the simulation is revealed, the band beckons the listener to manifest the energy and strength to fight and emerge from the darkness and lies taking place around them. Songs like Pressure and its marching band music, there's even a really cool version with the UCLA marching band, are energetic anthems that seem to pull the listener out of the abyss every time it gets deeper. If it's not a pep rally with a marching band that gets the listener out of the rut, Muse take things to church and sing the good gospel with Dig Down, encouraging listeners to get up and fight. Playing all this motivational music on over one half of the album is very good for this band. It shows their vast technical capabilities, their musical diversity, and a great understanding of a wide range of sounds. The music continues to come off as epic and cinematic in scope each and every time, yet never corny or derivative. Something Human is the strongest song on simulation theory and sums up Muse's latest work best. Since the album is about humans living in a simulation and breaking out of it, Something Human is the moment where one takes a deep breath and steps back and realizes what the whole thing is about. it's the realization of humanity in the midst of artificiality. Since this album is void, no pun intended, of singing about love in a romantic sense, part of this song's brilliance lies in it being the only ballad on the album, and it does what any good ballad does and talks about love, only love in the sense of love for humanity in this case. This cryptic message and dualistic meaning, along with the beauty and grand scale of the music, makes Something Human a very special way of tying the album together, and it epitomizes where Muse is at as musicians and what they're going for on Simulation Theory. This album came at a great time. When I first heard it, I was hesitant because Muse's last two efforts, though solid, didn't feel as inspired or raw as music they once put out. I've had the privilege of seeing them live, and it seemed like their energy was being spent at their live shows and the special effects and just the majesty of their live shows. When Simulation Theory came out and I first heard it, it sounded inspired, it sounded fun, it sounded full of good energy. As a matter of fact, my two young girls, it spoke to the album's power because when they first heard it, they immediately gravitated towards it. Now we're talking 6 years old and 4 years old. And mind you, they are very astute musically, and I've exposed them to a lot of different music from the time they could even crawl. But this album stood out to them. I mean, they could relate. It also helped when I showed them. We just went down the rabbit hole of watching all the accompanying videos, and those videos visually were just so neat for my girls. But anyway, it was a tight package. It was inspired. It was energetic. They felt reinvigorated as a band, and I just enjoy the album. It's something that I've gone back to multiple times. It's standing the test of time because I can go back anywhere on the album anytime, and I can just listen to it, the whole thing, not just a couple selective singles off of it. So great effort by one of my favorite bands.
Books and film.
I've been reading Own the Day by Aubrey Marcus. Aubrey's a fascinating individual. He's the founder and owner of the famous supplement company Onnit. He's much more than that. I consider him a major influence because his cutting-edge perspective on modern life. This book is brilliant because it talks about what defines a complete or good day. So he goes through the course of one day, whether it's waking up in the morning all the way to going to sleep at night. It's fascinating because Aubrey, like one of his big influences, Anthony Robbins, is a bit of a motivational speaker, if you will. Only in modern times, that role has changed, or the appearance of that role has changed significantly. I mean, Tony Robbins, though still relevant, certainly can't come off the same way he did at the height of his popularity. But the themes and the values are the same. In Aubrey's book, he talks about how you start your day, how you go through the day, how you finish the day to have an optimal day. This left quite an impression on me because after studying successful people, I realized that this formula is the same. They approach each day with a fervor and a strategy that maximizes their day. So I applied this principle to my own life recently, especially currently having the misfortune of being unemployed, which is another podcast on another day, and another subject, a la philosophy. I will say that having gone through this before with life experience, I realized that it is in my best interest when that happened to have a strategy for productivity during my time. That strategy, like Aubrey's book, addressed the physical side of things, the mental side, and the spiritual side of things. So each day I would approach each day with a particular strategy. So by the end of the day, I could deem that day a success. An example of that is my morning routine. Aubrey talks about this in the book, and I adopted some of his exact strategies, such as waking up and drinking a glass of water with a pinch of pink Himalayan salt, which replenishes some of the minerals that were depleted through the course of sleeping. This evolves into me having a morning routine that consists of meditation, motivation, mindfulness, and movement and breathing. I sort of combine all these strategies and it takes place anywhere from 10 minutes to 30 minutes. I have different names for the different time intervals that I complete, such as 5 minutes to fulfillment, and I stole that from Tony Robbins, 10 minutes to thrive, 2 minutes to the top. So you could go on with all the different time increments. Anyway, the point is I try to encompass the things I mentioned a second ago, which are meditation, calming or quieting your mind, especially in the morning after you undergo dreams and you sort of give a synopsis of the prior day. You want to erase that. You want a blank slate to start the day. So I've practiced breathing and meditating and just focusing on my breathing and my understanding of the meditation process. Part of the routine in the morning is mindfulness. Now, this part includes gratitude, which is another value that I learned from Tony Robbins way back when. And that's just recapping the previous day. This is how I've done it. Recapping the previous days and what I was grateful for. Now, when I first started this routine, and it's about 3 to 4 weeks old, most of my gratitude consisted of thank you for giving me this. And then I sat back and I thought, that's me. So it's very narcissistic. It's very self-absorbed. I said, let's have gratitude for others too. Let's incorporate others, such as thank the universe for giving me, or be grateful for the universe giving not only me gifts in the course of a day, but those I love gifts, giving the world gifts, such as the nature, such as beauty, such as creation. So it went beyond the scope of me. And I think this was expansive and a breakthrough, because I found myself, especially in times of adversity, such as not working, I felt that it's very easy to be self-focused, focused on you being the recipient of the bad draw, or you being the victim. So thinking about others, especially around this holiday time, was very important for the growth of myself spiritually and mentally. Going back to the morning routine, movement and breathing are the biggest part of it, if you ask me, because I start my day practicing my breathing patterns, and that oxygen while moving around and getting loose and letting the blood flow, it puts you in a zone that it's hard to describe. So that by the time you're done with the routine, you already feel successful and you're just starting your day, and you feel loose, you feel warm, you feel sharp. And as I've gone on with this routine, the breathing is getting easier. It's getting faster to get into that zone. It's getting more focused on the breathing patterns and changing those patterns. So it's just been remarkable. That's just a taste, but reading the book Own the Day by Aubrey Marcus was huge because it helped me formulate my own strategy for the day. And like I said, I'm adopting many of the strategies that are in the book, but that's okay because those things are so relevant, especially in modern times. And I've found since I've been doing this routine, just the morning part of it, I felt in a good place.
Sport and fitness.
You may not know, but I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan when it comes to NFL football. I'm not from Kansas City, so this seems obscure and weird, but I'll tell you a little history about my Kansas City Chiefs fandom. As a young watcher of sports and participant, one of my biggest idols, especially in the late 80s and early 90s, was Joe Montana, Joe Cool for the San Francisco 49ers. After watching him win countless Super Bowls and having an unblemished, impeccable record, I was just fascinated by his composure, his clutch, his efficiency, all the trademarks and athletes that I looked up to. Anyway, late in his San Francisco 49ers career, he underwent some serious injuries, especially by Lawrence Taylor in the playoffs, that sidelined him. A young, or well, pun intended, Steve Young, a remarkable quarterback in his own right, ended up taking Joe Montana's starting position during this adversity. So ultimately, the 49ers as an organization decided to go with the young guy, and they sent Joe Montana, the legend, who in my opinion is still the greatest quarterback of all time, sent him packing. Where did he go? He went to the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, as a Joe Montana fan, I was devastated, but I immediately followed Joe. So, like most of my sports fandom, I followed individuals versus franchises. So, what did I do? I became a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Watching Joe Montana, I think it was 1992, when he went on this remarkable playoff run and took the Kansas City Chiefs using Montana magic to the AFC Championship game against the would-be dynasty Buffalo Bills. Just short of an injury at halftime, I really think that Kansas City team was magic, and Joe Montana would have proved, like he did with the 49ers, that he was the greatest quarterback of all time. It didn't happen, but I did get to watch Joe Montana in 2 years with the Kansas City Chiefs recreate some of the magic that I fell in love with as a kid watching him for the 49ers. One of the things that stand out was when he, on Monday Night Football, beat Dan Marino in a classic shootout, and John Elway in a classic Monday night shootout when he came from behind in the fourth quarter and won the game. After he retired from Kansas City, I still continued to follow Kansas City. And ironically, my wife, being a Midwestern person from Lincoln, Nebraska, she had an uncle that lived in Kansas City, so I retained my fandom, big NFL fan, and I had the privilege of going to Kansas City to visit him when we went to see her relatives in Lincoln, which was like 3 hours away. We actually went to Kansas City Chiefs games on 2 years, two separate years. that Kansas City team at that time was great because they had a legendary coach in Dick Vermeil coaching them. They were the most high-powered offensive team in the NFL, and they were just loaded with superstars. And I got to watch a couple great live games, and I watched them do great things on Dick Vermeil's tenure as a coach. Anyway, I continue my Kansas City Chiefs fandom till today, having what I will say is the best team in the NFL to date. A recent controversy came up with the team and their running back, Kareem Hunt. This issue permeated beyond the boundaries of sport in NFL football because Kareem Hunt is seen on a video assaulting a woman. Now, this thing is controversial on many levels because this incident took place months before, but the videotape from the hotel, the surveillance videotape, revealed the actual incident now. And the team, the Kansas City Chiefs, are claiming that they did not have access to the tape, nor the NFL until now, like the public did. And ironically, TMZ, paparazzi outlet, were the ones that released the tape and had access to the tape first, supposedly. Anyway, Kareem Hunt, when the incident happened in February of 2018, there were no charges ultimately filed. And so I guess the organization and the NFL, until they saw the tape, were investigating the issue, and Kareem continued to play. The Chiefs were having a prolific and successful year thus far as one of the top teams in the NFL, if not the top. And then the tape gets released. Now, on the tape, and perhaps this is one of the reasons why charges weren't filed, this lady is supposedly shouting derogatory things at Kareem. And so Kareem ends up pushing what looks like to me, pushing a gentleman into her, knocking her over. But the violent exchange is not done there. After the lady falls to the ground from being hit by this other person that was pushed into her, Kareem can be seen walking up to her and kicking her in the side of the leg while she's on the ground. Now, many will remember the Ray Rice incident on the hotel elevator video footage where he's seen punching out his girlfriend and knocking her unconscious. This incident was compared to that, but in the spectrum or scope of things, I don't think the assault was of the same magnitude, but needless to say, it was a male in an NFL caliber athlete assaulting a lady. So it is unacceptable antisocial behavior that needs to be reprimanded. However, Kareem, when the incident happened, much to his chagrin, was not truthful or forthcoming about exactly how the incident went down. So when this videotape was released, the Chiefs were forced to cut him under the guise of he lied to us about what happened in the incident. Now, I feel that the incident, well, they were forced to cut him from social pressure, I believe, because the NFL has a lot of black marks about domestic abuse and how they've handled it, and players still allowed to be in the league and still allowed to proliferate despite these criminal circumstances. In the case of Kareem Hunt, I think the timing of it and this long delay in an investigation and this video being released by TMZ of all the outlets, it was the perfect storm, and the Chiefs as an organization to save face and help the NFL save face just cut him. Now, you're talking about them cutting a player at the top of the league. This guy led the league in rushing last year, and he was well on his way to another Pro Bowl caliber year, and the team was a first-place team. So the idea of cutting a player that's at the height of his prowess is somewhat unheard of, but I understand the organization. Now, as a Chiefs fan, it hurts me to see Kareem go because I do believe from a human standpoint in rehabilitation and second chances. But in the case of the Chiefs, they did do the right thing. I mean, we'll probably see Kareem Hunt, if it's my guess, a year or two from now in another uniform. And there's no doubt that he is such a talent that he will be great wherever he ends up. But this is a huge social issue, and I think the Chiefs did make the right decision. Now, I'd love to see my Chiefs right this wrong, if you will, and I'd love to see them go after Le'Veon Bell, a Pittsburgh Steeler, one of their rivals, who's just marred in controversy himself, not from a criminal standpoint, but from the fact that he completely held out on the Pittsburgh Steelers for a bigger contract and lost a lot of money. And you're talking about another back at the height of his career. So I think the Chiefs should go after him if it's reasonable. But either way, I think they'll be okay.
The rest.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 2 of the Sweatshop Podcast with your host, the Sick Man VC. Next week, I'm going to talk about a documentary I watched about North Carolina's own, the Avett Brothers. May it last, a portrait of the Avett Brothers. I'm also going to talk about the UFC taking place this weekend with some huge matchups between Brian Ortega versus Max Holloway and the Bullet versus Joanna Champ. I'll see you next week.
This has been a Sick Man production, brought to you by VC. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time at the Sweatshop. And I'm out, 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 and I'm out.